Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. Can President Biden convince African leaders that America is a better partner than China? Let's get to the bottom line. This week, the White House hosts leaders from 49 African countries to try and convince them that their continent is a real priority for America. It's going to be a hard sell, since many Africans feel that Washington has treated them with a lot of benign neglect, more of a problem than an opportunity. A place that's full of precious minerals that we want, like lithium and cobalt, which America needs for its electric cars, but also a place loaded with security concerns and humanitarian crises and corruption. Meanwhile, Russia's kind of zoomed to the top as Africa's number one weapons dealer, and China's trade with African countries has reached a record $261 billion last year. That's about five times more than the U.S. An African youth survey by Ichikovitz Family Foundation found that 77% of youth across the continent identified China as the most important nation for Africa's future, not the United States. Plus, China deals with whatever government is in place, no questions asked, while the U.S. cherry-picks its allies and offers lectures about democracy. So can the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit here in Washington, D.C. turn things around? And what can America offer that Africa really wants? Today we're talking with Arikana Chihombori-Kwao, the former ambassador of the African Union to the United States. She's also the founder of the Africa Diaspora Development Initiative, which aims to link Africans abroad back to the continent. Ambassador, it's such a pleasure to talk with you today. This big summit is going on right now in Washington, D.C. You're in Zimbabwe. I guess I want to start by asking you, what do the leaders of Africa and President Biden have to get right after this week that you think needs is essential?
Thank you for having me. This is a very important summit. It's a conversation between the continent and the United States, a conversation that is desperately needed, particularly at this time in our history and in our life. The United States, let me start by saying, it still remains the most preferred trading partner for the African nations. However, like I used to tell the State Department and any engagements that we've had with the United States, I felt during my tenure that the United States was slowly losing ground, and they were risking losing their position as Africa's preferred trading partner. So this is a very important meeting that I hope that if the United States, like I used to tell my colleagues, I felt that the United States, if this was a basketball game, the United States needed to call for timeout, for U.S. needed to realize that this is a new game and it required new rules of engagement, therefore a need for the United States to re-strategize. I'm hoping that for a change, this meeting, the United States can begin to realize it's no longer business as usual. It's no longer a case of the United States saying, we make policy and we tell the Africans. That has got to change. It is a recipe for disaster. It is a recipe for the United States seeing itself losing its place as Africa's preferred trading partner. That's what makes this meeting very important. And I'm hoping that the U.S. can call for timeout and understand that engaging Africa at this time, it is a new game that is calling for new rules of engagement. And therefore, it is time to re-strategize and treat the Africans fairly, treat the Africans respectfully, and treat the Africans as equal partners.
You know, Ambassador, I think one of the things that I'm trying to be sensitive to is that we often over in the United States, as you know, and you were the ambassador of the African Union, tend to talk about a continent as opposed to individual countries and nations, of which there are 54. There are 49 heads of state here in Washington this week. And are we making a mistake? Is our ignorance on our side, from your impression of our ignorance, you know, amplified by us talking about Africa so much as opposed to talking about Rwanda, Zimbabwe, Ghana? Should we be, is our illiteracy in this level so obvious that it's a real problem? And do these kinds of summits that bring everyone together do a disservice to that kind of getting to know each country more distinctly?
I think for the United States, and I'll repeat it, and I used to repeat it all the time during my tenure, what really is behind the failure of effective engagement with Africa is the disrespect of the Africans.
Huh.
That's where the problem begins. If we cannot accept, if the United States cannot accept Africans as equal partners, if the United States, for example, let's look at this particular meeting, this particular summit. There was no defined agenda. There has never been defined agendas whenever they meet with African countries as individual countries. It's always the United States setting the agenda, the United States setting the policies, and the United States telling the Africans about the policies. Mm. That is no way to have any meaningful engagement. If you take, for example, the fourth FOCAC meeting that was held between China and the African heads of state, way in advance, the issues were clearly defined. The agenda was going to focus on trade. It was going to focus on aid. It was going to focus on investments. The African heads of states were engaged in the discussion, in the planning. The outcomes were clearly defined with a way forward in terms of follow-up. It was a fruitful meeting that addressed the issues that needed to be addressed between not only African countries individually with China, but also Africans collectively with China. There is no published agenda. There are no issues that have been presented to the African heads of states. Africans have not been asked to engage in terms of creating the agenda and making sure that when the African heads of states come to Washington, the outcomes, the issues to be discussed are going to be meaningful outcomes with follow-up and deliverables that are going to be beneficial to both. It remains a one-sided conversation with the United States telling the Africans the agendas and the policies. The Africans are not on the table to discuss issues pertaining to us, wherein lies the problem. Mm. And the reason that continues to be the case, what underscores that is the disrespect for Africans. I repeated it. I complained about it repeatedly. It is a serious problem. The United States must understand that Africans are not going to take it anymore. If you don't treat the Africans fairly, the United States is going to see itself slowly losing ground to China, to Russia, to all other nations, because without respecting the Africans, without treating the Africans as equal, without understanding that exploitation and abuse of Africa simply cannot continue, this meeting, this summit, is going to be yet another gathering with no outcomes, no deliverables until the next summit. I'm sorry, but the disrespect of the Africans is at the bottom of it all. Agenda for this meeting should have been set out in advance. Africans should have been involved. Without the involvement of the Africans in these discussions, this is a useless meeting. I'm sorry, but that is the fact.
No, I am very grateful for your candor. And it sounds to me, I mean, I think there was a lot of criticism of the last summit like this under President Obama, that there was like no follow through. And, you know, it's one of the big questions I'm asking is, how do you make a big bang summit where everyone comes over? It's like checking off the box and say, OK, we've done Africa. Now we can move on to other things. How do you make that something that's a more sustainable and a more continuous engagement of the United States with Africa? And what I'm hearing from you is, frankly, a lot of disappointment and, you know, a lot of pessimism about what may come out of this summit.
Well, the point of the matter is already, you know, nothing is going to come out of it because it is a one-sided conversation.
Right.
Where is the agenda? The agenda should have been published way in advance. The African leaders should have been given an opportunity to also state their position so they can come up with an African position that can then be discussed alongside the American position. So the fact that it is a one-sided conversation that is yet going to be another useless meeting with no outcomes. But again, I'm going to keep emphasizing the reason this is happening is because there is a disrespect for the Africans. There is a general feeling that we don't need to hear from the Africans. Their opinions do not matter. That wherein lies the problem. Why were the Africans not consulted? Why were the Africans not part of an agenda Why was there not even an agenda like what happened during the FOCAC meeting with China? Those are some basic issues. No head of state. President Biden would not pick up and go to meet with any other leader in the world without an agenda. That simply doesn't happen.
Right.
So what makes the U.S. think that they can engage African leaders without an agenda? Mm. Come to Washington. Let me tell you what I want to do for you. Come to Washington. Let me tell you what you need to do in your country. That game is an old game.
Right.
It's not going to work anymore. To be honest with you, if I'm to speak the truth, I hope a lot of heads of states don't come. Because it is an insult. It is an abuse of the African leaders. Mm. It's a disrespect of the African leaders. Where is the agenda? Please respect the African leaders. Do unto them what you would want done unto you.
So
it's really a simple ask.
Let me ask you a question. You mentioned China and how China approaches this. I'm interested in what China gets so right. But is there a blind spot there? Are there problems in the China-Africa relationship from your perspective?
Let me also, hit the nail in the head and deal with the 10,000-pound gorilla in the room.
Yeah.
Racism as well plays a very important part. The disrespect of the Africans also goes back to a lot of the people who work in the U.S. government, not all of them, but there's a significant of them who automatically assume that Africans do not know what they're doing. Africans need help. Africans need to be told what to do. And racism is also at the bottom of it all. We need to address the individuals who are going to be visiting Africa, engaging Africa. They must understand that Africans are equal to them. Mm. But when one goes to Africa with a sense of superiority, wherein lies the problem, because you are not going to engage those leaders who are going to come to the table as equals. You go in feeling superior, you come back feeling superior. That is not an issue with the Chinese. The Chinese are coming in. The Chinese, yes, if you don't negotiate with them and they win the game, then that's your fault. But they don't come in feeling superior. They understand that Africa has something they need. So they will come to the Africans. They will come and make sure that they let the Africans know that you matter to us, that our relationship with you does matter, that you don't get that feeling with the United States. You get the feeling that there's this sense of superiority, that you Africans, you ought to be glad that we are engaging you. You ought to be glad that we are inviting you to come to Washington. That sense of superiority, it has to change. Whether it calls for the United States to retrain their people as they engage Africa, but it is that which really goes to the bottom of why the engagements are not going to be as effective. They must take a page out of what Africa is doing. Let me say this. Chinese people didn't used to be that way, but they quickly changed their strategy. Hmm. When they realized that the game they were playing was not going to work in Africa, they changed their strategy. And that's why, like I said it during my tenure, I'll continue to say it again. If this was a basketball game, the United States need to call for timeout. This is a new game, and it requires new rules of engagement. The United States must, first and foremost, make sure that racism is out of the picture. Africans are just as smart as anybody else. Africans are equal. And until we engage as equals, all these meetings, all these conversations are always going to be useless. And it goes back to the individuals who are going to be at the table with the Africans. So the U.S. also need to address the issue of racism and make sure that the people engaging Africa, their minds are clear and they accept that Africans are equal.
Tell us about Pan-Africanism. Tell us about what Africa, the states in Africa, are doing to trade, to connect, to move their agenda forward proactively, no matter what the rest of the world is thinking about it.
Absolutely. I have to say, if you were to go back to 1963, when our Pan-African fathers came together in the hopes of creating an Africa that spoke with one voice, an Africa that had one military, an Africa that had one central bank, one monetary fund, one stock exchange, and an Africa with one customs union. We failed at that over the years. But finally, 2 years ago, they approved the AFCFTA, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, which is a a policy that saw Africa coming together in one particular area, that we are now speaking with one voice when it comes to trade. Yes, its implementation is a monster. Yes, its implementation is work in progress. But you can say, of the issues that our Pan-African fathers met to discuss in 1963, finally, over 50 years later, we are able to accomplish the first one, which is being an Africa that's going to the world as one customs union. The spirit of Pan-Africanism, it has taken us a long time to really begin to come together to dismantle the Berlin Conference, which, of course, for those who think, oh, Berlin Conference is a thing of the past, think again. As long as we have a country called Togo, as long as we have a country called Congo-Brazzaville, Eswatini, Malawi, those small countries, even Nigeria or the big ones, Kenya, Egypt, Morocco, they cannot survive on their own. As long as we're talking about the little bitty individual African countries, we are never going to realize the dream of a united Africa that speaks with one voice. And until we dismantle some of those borders, until we begin to wake ourselves up as a people, until we begin to realize that the colonizers and the rule of divide and conquer left us feeling inferior, supremacy, white supremacy was introduced from the very onset when the colonizers came to Africa. We were taught to believe that everything African was bad, everything European was better. And we still continue to suffer from that mentality. So yes, while we demand that the West and those who don't look like us Africans treat us equally, realize that we are human beings just like they are, we too, as Africans, we have a lot of work to do on a personal level, where we must also believe, truly believe, that we are equal to everybody else on Earth and that we are capable. That also is a disease that we need to realize as Africans. Let's wake up and realize that white people are not superior to us. Chinese are not superior to us. We are just as good as anybody else. That is a serious challenge because we still have people. Even when you look at issues that we could stand up as a people and push back, you see ministers from the Western world going to Africa, and they basically can... I've seen them say some of the most ridiculous things to the Africans. Right. And instead of the Africans pushing back and saying, hey, hold it, this is not going to fly, instead the Africans are afraid. Just inherently fear of the white person without any, for no good reason whatsoever, except that we have been programmed to feel inferior. So on an individual basis, we continue to speak the gospel of truth. We continue to shed the light as to the brainwashing that the African has been put through, wherein lies the problem. When you look at what is being done at the World Bank, for example, the Bretton Woods institutions, the frivolous loans, countries that have never defaulted on their loan repayments, and right. yet they're still given large interest rates. Why? Countries like the United States that don't need any help,
right.
they get loans at zero interest rates. You look at the issue. I'm glad President Biden, I hear he's going to be talking about having the AU as the 51st member of the G20. Well, let's also take it to the next level. Let's go to the United Nations. Let's have Africa, 1.4 right. billion people. They need to come to the table. Let's African Union be the sixth member of the five-member UN Security Council. You can't just totally disregard 1.4 billion people because you've gotten away with it for centuries. Well, guess what? Game is over. Africans are waking up. Africans are beginning to realize and understand the game that have been played. Unfortunately, we don't have that critical mass of people who are continuously going to speak truth to power.
Right.
The good thing with the story of Africa is ours, we are coming from a position of righteousness,
right.
a position of truth, a position of facts.
Right.
Those are constants. They don't change. Let's continue to give the world an overdose of our truth. But at the same time, while we are doing so, and demanding a world that is fair, that is just, and free of right. racism, bigotry, and hate, we must also work on our own development and our own awakening as a people.
Talk to me a little bit about how Africa can take advantage of its intellectual connection and assets to entrepreneurs who have left but may want to help Africa back, because this is one of your major initiatives.
Absolutely. The brain drain that started over 400 years ago when the best and the brightest and the fittest were taken out of Africa forcibly. And that is when the brain drain started. I want to make sure that is very clear. And when we talk about African diaspora, we're talking about all people of African descent living outside of Africa. Let's be very clear. African Americans, they are Africans who were forcibly taken out of Africa, plus the continued brain drain, those who are later immigrants who left Africa running away from famine, from wars, in search of greener pastures. The end result is, as we speak, Africa has a serious deficit of expertise. Right. However, the good news for Africa is that we have a very young, intelligent, vibrant population that needs opportunities. So when we can marry the age group of young, intelligent Africans with the expertise coming from the diaspora, we can see an Africa that can propel itself to take its rightful place on the world stage like it once was. So yes, the diaspora are an important component of Africa's development. Make no mistake about that. All the African leaders are fully aware of that. All the African leaders are in full support of coming up with programs to make it easier for the diaspora to move back. We want to look at diaspora who can come to Africa, not just focus on a country that you were born in, but if you are a person of African descent, Africa should matter to you. Africa should be your problem. You must own Africa's problems, understand it, and participate in the development of Africa. For when we have a stable Africa, it now also correlates with an African-American who is anchored. It correlates with an Afro-Caribbean who is anchored. It correlates with an Afro-Latino who is anchored. Right. Currently, descendants of the formerly enslaved, they're like a ship without an anchor. The wind blows that way, here they go. Until they're anchored by being accepted by Africa, until they're anchored by participating in the development of Africa. The Jews do it, the Chinese do it, the Indians do it, the Irish do it, African Americans, together with the continental Africans, we must make sure that we work together to participate in the development of Africa, because the development and the building of the Africa we want, it is our responsibility first and foremost, and ours alone. Others are welcome to come join us. Others are welcome to help us. Others are welcome to engage us as equal partners. But we must own the building of the Africa that we want as a united front of the African diaspora.
Well, I want to make a deal with you, Ambassador. I want this to be a start of a conversation with you that we have many other times. I think it's a very important conversation, and I'm grateful to you, Ambassador Adekana Chihombori-Kwao, former African Union diplomat and founder of the Africa Diaspora Development Initiative. Thanks for your candor, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, and keep up the good work. These are messages that we must continue to put out, because the average American is not aware. The average European citizen is not aware of what the various Western governments are doing. The atrocities have been going on for far too long. They must come to an end. And your program is doing a great job in getting these messages out. We must inform and educate our citizens.
Thank you, Ambassador. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
So what's the bottom line? The smart money's on Africa. That's where the most interesting global action is going to be. Demographically, the West and much of Asia are aging, while Africa has the youngest crowd on the planet. Within a few decades, much of the world's global middle class is going to come from Africa. And Africa's going to become a stickier place for its brilliant innovators to stay, rather than racing off to Europe or the United States. Sure, China and the U.S. will both remain engaged in Africa, but less and less on their terms, and more on the terms of African nations as they rise and become more powerful in their own right. That's the story of unstoppable Africa, rising not because of what nations outside the continent are doing for it, but what it's doing to chart its own course. And that's the bottom line.